Again, we're going to just reach out to all of the people, send up prayers for everybody that's going through this tragedy in California. And I just want y'all to know, don't worry, I will not be distracted. I'm going to keep my focus on what we're supposed to do today, but I will double back to this story because I want to give y'all some context of everything that's going on. Because what we don't do here, we can have discourse, but what we're not going to do is use propaganda. That's what we're not going to do. Anyway, I am so glad this morning to have this conversation based on our public school systems, education in general in the United States of America, in particular in Georgia. There are many people who have been having discussions around what is the best way to proceed so that all of our children can get the education that they deserve. Especially children, Black children, children who live in marginalized places, vulnerable populations of children, Black children. I'm talking about Black children in particular, poor children, children who a lot of them attend Title I schools, all of the like. This is the conversation that I want to have. And there are many different opinions of how this should go. Some people say just pour more money into public school education. Others say, you know, blow up the whole system. Then you have other people who are saying, let's get rid of the Department of Education and let states attack this, you know, state by state. Then some states have said, let the counties decide how they want to deal with public school education. And then parents are just saying, can we have a choice? What is our choice on how we educate our children? Should we put our children in public schools near our homes, or should we bus them out to charter schools or magnet schools? Or do we just some kind of way find the money to put them in private schools? Or do we homeschool? Or do we do virtual academies that will help us? I mean, it's just a lot of questions that people have around how we educate our children and what choices they should have. And so Georgia every year passes different types of bills to deal with the like. But today we're going to have four different guests, but I'm going to start right now just introducing one of my former colleagues, the Honorable Ron Mayo, and I'm going to let him talk for 1 second about who he is and what he does, because we came in the General Assembly together. He has since left and does a lot of work around school choice, charter schools, and the likes. So good morning, Representative Ron Mayo, my friend. Welcome to the Wake Up with D Morning Show.
Good morning, Representative D. Dawkins Hagler. Glad to be here, waking up with D. And thank you for the platform, D. Always a pleasure and an honor to spend time with you and put our minds together. And my role, just a little background, you mentioned my background as a former legislator, and my current role is Director of Policy and Advocacy with the Georgia Charter Schools Association, which essentially means I elevate the agenda and the interests of charter schools. And the interests of charter schools, since they are public schools, is the interest of those members of the public, our friends, families, and neighbors who enjoy and benefit from that public resource, those public schools, the charter schools in Georgia, of which there are 96.
Wow, I did not realize there were 96 charter schools in Georgia. Now, when we were in the General Assembly, there was so much contention and fighting all the time over how do we correct this system? What mechanisms should be put in place? And it was almost like a line divided in the sand regarding vouchers, school choice, and the like. Now, let me be very transparent with you all. Okay. I support public charter schools. And I also believe that children in certain counties, a county should be able to, if you're in a county, your child should be able to go to whatever public school they want to in that particular county, regardless of their address. When we were in the General Assembly, at that time, Representative Alicia Thomas Morgan, which is now Cersei, introduced a bill on school choice. You remember that, Ron?
Yeah.
And I was one of the signers of that bill that said, were you one as well?
I don't believe so.
Okay. That it basically allowed.
I don't remember the bill number to tell you if I had a role in it, but I don't recall that one as being okay. One I signed.
But basically, this bill allowed children in a particular county to attend any public school they wanted to if the parents could get them to such school, not putting the burden on the school system to transport them there, but giving parents the option that if your child wants to say you live on the south side, you want your child to go to school on the north side, or you're on the east side, you want your child to go to school on the west side, they would have that option. That is as far as I would take it. Now, I want you to tell me, what do you feel? Do you feel that parents should have that option, or should it go further? That if parents want their children to go to public or private charter schools, well, private schools, should the state take the money that is allocated per child and allow it to follow the parent? Or should parents figure out what they're going to do? But talk to us a little bit about the charter school and what it does, because you said it's 93 schools.
Mm-hmm. So 96 charter schools, public.
I'm sorry, 96.
Schools. Yes, ma'am. 96 in Georgia, 64,000 students are enrolled in public charter schools in the state of Georgia. There are 14,000 students on waiting list for charter schools in Georgia. And let me give you some background. You talked about the critical need and the real genuine desire to find solutions to educate all of our children so that they can succeed, in particular the Black and the marginalized. And what I would highlight about charter schools is we serve those populations in numbers that are greater than traditional schools, and not to diminish traditional schools because we see them as partners and in the same fight. But if you look at charter school demographics in Georgia, 53% of the students enrolled are Black students. 70% are children of color. And many of those are Title I students. So the same Title I programs that come down from the federal government that are administered by the state in many cases are programs that our families, our students really depend on. And these are students in zip codes that you and I are aware of, and we've spent time in some of the most impoverished and underserved communities around Metro Atlanta, DeKalb, Atlanta, and Fulton and Clayton and other surrounding areas. And these are students who are in tuition-free public schools. To answer your other question, the broader topic of school choice and where I see kind of this equilibrium, if you will, and a good place for policymakers to center the discussion around choice and options available. You mentioned some of the history with the theme schools. So choice has been around. It's been a concept for 40, 50 years. When in the 80s and 90s, many of the students in one part of the county, let's talk about DeKalb for a moment, South DeKalb, would be bused, and you had the minority to majority program. So a form of choice where parents were running from, for whatever reasons, not to diminish those schools they were running from, but in fact, they were running to other options. We've always had a demand for options. So to answer your question, I am in all of the above. Let's start with that and then determine the best policy approach for the limited money we have available. So all of those, you colorfully and eloquently describe many of the choice options. And I'm appetized when I hear you talking about the resources and tools for some families and some students where a homeschooling or virtual school option might be a good fit. Other students where the neighborhood school may be the best fit. Other students where a small setting private school, a religious Christian school that is centered in community and a cultural awareness that's appropriate for a student or a family may be a good fit. Where, you know, I don't get kind of stuck is in this idea that there's a one size fits all, or that some option shouldn't be considered as part of the public portfolio of education. And I look at it that way. And then we could talk about what we have money to pay for. That's a different discussion, because you always get into finite resources, and there's only so much money to go around and divide. Where you have all these great ideas, you want to put as many gift wrap packages around the tree as possible, but you just can't afford it with the budget you have. All of them are great ideas. We have to think about where we get the most bang for the buck. Where are we going to get the best
ROI? Okay, now, I need you to hold on for me. I got to go to commercial and come back. And when we do, I'm going to let you finish that thought, and I'm going to bring on a couple more guests so we can continue this conversation. You're waking up with D News and Talk, 1380 WAOK.
Director of Policy and Advocacy with the Georgia Charter Schools Association.
Yes, and as he was going out, he was telling us about he supports all types of school choice, whether it is, does that to include vouchers?
So let me be clear. My role with the Georgia Charter Schools Association, and that's the only policy position I take, is to advocate for public charter schools. What I was suggesting is that I think there's a philosophical view of many parents and families, and I can kind of highlight that view, because I understand the choice landscape is to say that all of the above, many options can be suitable for children. Our focus at the Georgia Charter Schools Association is public charter schools.
Okay, I was just asking your personal beliefs, but I got it, because I don't want to get you in no trouble if you're going to get in trouble. But what I was trying to say is, I was just saying, because a lot of times when we have this discussion, legislators will, and people who work in this arena are sometimes afraid to say how they really feel for fear of backlash, right? I personally, myself, I vehemently oppose vouchers, but that's a philosophical thing for me personally. However, I feel that people have the right to decide what they want to do for their own children. So if you want your child to go to private school, I think that should be an option. But budgeting is always the issue, and that's where you were going in your conversation. But I know that people will run people against each other because of vouchers. People will, teacher unions, PTA people will get very upset. And I'm not saying there's not reason for that, it's rightfully so, but people have to know, well, that's my opinion. People have to know all of the ins and outs about that. Now, you all, Representative, I'm still going to call him Representative because that's what he is. Once a representative, always a representative. Romeo is going to have to leave us at 8 o'clock. And I wanted him to get an opportunity to speak a little bit before the other guests, which I'm not now about to introduce. But he's promised that he's going to come on another day and go full throttle of public charter schools, and hopefully he will, and I'm going to have some people who own a public charter school, some Black people, so that we can figure out now that since the money is there and it's been done, we better figure out how to get that money into the Black communities that need them. So as he gets ready to finish his sentence about education, I'm going to bring on the other three guests, because I want them to talk about that, the money for a second. I'm going to bring on three individuals. One, you have heard him many times on all the WAOK stations. That is Representative Billy Mitchell, who has served so many years, all the way up to being the leader of the House Democratic Caucus. And he is the past national president of the National Black Caucus of State Legislators. Then we have with us Otha Thornton. Everybody knows Mr. Thornton. He has been the Democratic nominee for Superintendent of Education. And he has been the president of not only the Georgia PTA, but the national PTA. And then we have Heather. Oh, God. Heather, help me with your last name. I'm sorry.
Scalzetti,
who is a guru in public policy and around this whole issue. So welcome all of them to the show real quick. Y'all give them a round of applause. Yay. Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming. Because this conversation is going to get deep. Y'all hold for 1 second. Representative Mayo, my friend Ron Mayo, finished telling me about the issue around that funding thing, the budgeting.
Right. Yes. My point is that we have finite funding available. We have a lot of great ideas, ways to fund public education, to fund the schools that rely on state resources, that rely on local taxpayer funding sources, whether it's ESPLOS money that goes to improve capital projects and build new schools, or the money that comes from the state that supports programs, or the federal government for Title I and IDEA, the disabilities funding. We have buckets of money, and we have a number of different ways we can look at appropriating resources to get the best outcomes for students, to keep our taxpayers, our stakeholders engaged, enrolled, and continuing to invest in their communities, wanting to reside in areas where there's quality educational options. It's great for the economy. When we have good schools, quality options, families are more enticed by those communities. Businesses, jobs are enticed and attracted to those communities. It's in all of our interest to offer the options within the public system that can be administered and accountable to the public, to families in line waiting, 14,000 on wait lists for charter schools in Georgia right now, 64,000 currently enrolled. My appeal to Representative Mitchell and other legislators and stakeholders and thought leaders is to consider the reality that parents have chosen. You know, it's not what we believe, what we think, our ideological views on education. We're looking at a state of education where families have decided they want these options, public charter schools. I believe it's incumbent upon our leaders to respond to the demand and look at the results, look at the data, which will tell us that these schools, side by side, when we look at adjacent traditional neighborhood schools compared to their charter school peers, I would suggest to you that charter schools are performing on par and in many cases above the metrics that are being achieved by neighborhood schools. These schools have been options for families now going back to the 90s, and we have an environment where we can continue to support them if we put the political will behind resources that are going to fund these non-traditional public schools.
Now, hold that key right there. Now, you brought Representative Mitchell into the conversation. So, Representative Mitchell, I want you to respond then. Now, let me just be very clear, not about them. This is a heated subject because a lot of people feel like this money should not be going to public charters when the money should be staying in the local public schools. And you know what? I'm going to keep my opinion out of this right this second. Representative Mitchell? Oh, what happened? Did he drop?
Are you with me?
Yes, we're here. We're with you.
Great. Good morning. And to my good friend, Ron Mayo, who does an exceptional job for that the charter school organization. Whatever they're paying him is not enough. He's a good friend, good advocate, and provides us with great information to make our decisions. And yes, I did say he is a good friend for sure. And let me start off by saying to you, Dee, and to the listeners here, I'm no prude on charter schools. As a matter of fact, I think they can be a good thing. In fact, as some of your listeners may know, to make a long story short, I was the guest speaker at a high school graduation in DeKalb County not too long ago. And the boys wore one color and the girls wore another color. And I was amazed that it was almost three times as many girls graduating from this high school than there were boys. I asked the principal, what's going on? And she mentioned that the boys just were not making it. So I proposed to the superintendent at that time
that I'd like to start a charter school. I want the boys that you are suspending and dropping out that you don't want in your public school system, and we'll get some male teachers and we'll start our own charter. The superintendent was so enthusiastically in support of that, he said he would even give us the building. And as we prepared to do just that, unfortunately, his contract was not renewed. And here we are trying to make a relationship with the newest superintendent. So I said all that to say I'm not a prude on charter schools. I do believe that we can separate charter schools, however, from this notion of vouchers, which went into effect January 1st. Where we get
Hold on for a second. We're going to have to come back to the voucher conversation because we got to go to break. Mm-hmm. Representative Mayer, I know you have to go. I sure hate you do, but we're going to bring you back whenever you get a chance, unless you can stay on a few more minutes. If not,
he's a good
can
man.
You or you got to go right this second? Hard line.
I do have a hard line. I wish I could stay and talk some more. We'll do it again.
That's okay. We're going to do it again, but I want y'all to give it up for Representative Ron Mayo and come back another day. And Ron Mayo, I'm still waiting on you to send me some memorabilia from your father. I'm still waiting.
I have it for you. I'll give it to you when I see you.
I appreciate it, y'all. Thank you. You're going to let him go. We're going to go to break. Okay, what are we saying, Representative Mitchell?
I said, let me get in that line as well.
No, you can't. You should ask way before now. But anyway, Representative Ron Mayo, y'all know his father. His father is, he played Grady on Sanford and Son. So thank you so much. He's going to get me that memorabilia I've been asking for about a good 15 years. News and break, News and Talk, 1380 WAOK. We're back. You're listening to Wake Up With D Show on WAOK. And so we are talking about school choice, and Representative Mitchell's getting ready to talk about the bill they just passed. Once he does that, we're going to bring in these experts who are going to talk about what impact does this have on our public schools and our children in their communities. And we're all going to just have this real conversation. So go ahead, Representative Mitchell, finish your comment.
Well, January 1st, the law that went into effect, we created a new authority, which is called the Georgia Education Savings Authority, which will run the program to provide eligible K-12 students in lower performing schools. And lower performing schools are defined at the lowest 25% of performing schools. We'll provide them $6,500 in annual funding for private tuition, tutoring, and one of the only things that I like about the voucher is that it will also provide that money for those parents who elect to homeschool their children. They would be eligible for that for expenses. So, one of the things that I will tell you about this law is, there's some private schools in our area that it's about $38,000 a year, not including transportation and other expenses that you will have for books and the like, to attend a private school. $6,500 is certainly not going to change that algorithm. The reality is that this is just an opportunity for those who can afford to send their children to private school to receive some kind of break or incentive at taxpayer expense. I will say, to be quite candid with you, if you wish to send your kids to private school, have at it. If that's what you wish to do, certainly you should be able to do that. But at taxpayer expense is certainly not real being judicious with the taxpayer money. I will tell you as well that one of the things
I have a question for you, Representative Mitchell, because I don't want you skirting around this. You were the chair of the Democratic caucus, and you have been, for a long time. And the caucus took a position on this particular bill, because the caucus takes positions on bills that are very important. The caucus position was to what?
The caucus position believed that because of the way the state of education is and how the budget, every single cent that the taxpayers pay to run our state is, that essentially this was taking money away from public school, public education, and being incentivizing those who wish to send their children to private school. And so as a result of that, that was something that the Democratic caucus as a whole could not support. The reality is this, no matter how you feel about public and private schools, where there are good public schools, not the case with necessarily with private school, but where there are good public schools, the crime rate is lower. Where there are good public schools, educational and economic qualities are higher. Where there are good public schools,
home values are higher. Because you're right. Those things happen. The caucus took a position not to support it. And then what happened? How did the caucus vote?
With the exception of one or two members, our caucus was unanimous in not supporting this legislation.
Mm-hmm. And because of those, and the bill passed by how many votes?
The bill passed by one vote.
Uh-huh. And the two people that voted in support of the bill that were part of the caucus were what color?
They were black folks.
Okay. Black Democrats voted for the bill. The bill passed by one vote. See, those are the conversations that we need to have. Stop right there, Representative Mitchell. Hold that thought. Otha and Heather. Because I know where you're going, Billy. No. Why is it detrimental? Because you try, you always, because you're good at this. You're good at this. You try to always keep the peace and you're very good at it. But I'm telling you, we know the public schools are good because wherever they show up, that good things do happen when they have the money that they need. But yeah, this bill that the Democratic caucus took a vote on passed because two black people, Democrats, voted and it won by one vote. Otha and Heather, tell us why it was important for, we can start with you, Otha, why should the Democrats have held the line on that bill? Or tell me, what are you, the impact? Come on. Or Heather, y'all work it out. But come on, Otha, you start first because you ran for superintendent of education twice.
Okay, thank you very much for having me on this morning. Ma'am, I only had the honor of being the national PTA president, but I did serve down at the Capitol as legislative chair for Georgia PTA. But again, thank you for having me this morning. A couple of things I have to say in this argument. First of all, to my core, I believe public education is a public good. Okay, that's number one. 90% of our children in this country go to public schools, including Georgia. With that being said, the second thing is race has always been a factor in education in Georgia. With the passing of Brown versus, I'll make it concise, with the passing of Brown versus Board of Education, at the time you had Talmadge in office and also Griffin, Governor Griffin. And with that being said, they said they would rather close public schools than integrate them. So at that point in Georgia history, in the legislature, they began feeding money to public schools, so these things called segregation academies, because they didn't want white kids going to school with black kids. Now, with that being said, as we moved out through history, what ended up happening when the government really cracked down on them doing that, they began getting programs like, tax credits, where we had schools that were still discriminating against black kids. These vouchers are part of that. And what I mean by that is, although we have black kids in charter and private schools, again, they really don't want that, but they're taking funding away from public schools that basically tend to blacks, black kids, to put into, private pockets, to basically take away money from public schools. And then we, as we saw the other day, there was a $400 million increase to create more prisons. So just imagine what's going on there. But again, the vouchers are just an extension of Georgia's history of race and education. I'll stop right there.
And Missy, I'll piggyback here. As we know, our current
I'm sorry. We have to go to break. I've got to get off for a second. You are talking. You're waking up with D, host of the none other than the Wake Up with D Morning Show, and we have phenomenal guests on this morning talking about public school and choices. We're going to go back after the break, come back after the break, and finish with you coming on, Heather. News and talk, WAOK.
WAOK, best station in the land.
We're back. You're waking up with D. This is your girl, the host of the Wake Up with D Morning Show. And I am so excited to have my guest still on. When we went to break, Heather, you were about to say something. I want you to go ahead and finish your thought.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me this morning, D. As many might may not know, our current QBE formula, which is the formula that's used to fund Georgia's education, has remained unchanged for 45 years. And this leaves our schools under-resourced and our students underserved. So this
outdated
formula.
Can you stop for one second,
formula,
Heather? Sure. Heather, stop for a second. Can you explain to the listeners, because a lot of them are not up to speed on what QBE is. So you're going to have to talk to them like, you know, explain it to them like not how we would talk. Explain it to them so they can get what we're saying.
So the QBE formula is essentially the budget that funds K-12 education for the state. And so within the budget, there's budget allocations and weights that are given within that funding formula.
Yes, keep going. Keep telling them about the quality-based education, and that's QBE. Keep going.
Correct.
Keep going.
Okay. So the formula is currently outdated. It overlooks critical funding weights, as I was mentioning, that are essential for addressing the diverse needs of students, particularly those living in poverty. As it stands right now, 51% of our Georgia students are currently living in poverty. And it's not just a statistic. It represents the lives of our children, their families, and our future. And as past President Thornton mentioned yesterday, there is a proposed allocation of $458 million to expand our jail system, which raises serious questions about our priorities. You know, while public safety is undoubtedly important, we must ask ourselves, are we investing in solutions that will break the cycle of poverty in the state and create pathways to success for our students? So the current QBE formula neglects vital areas such as mental health services, school counselors, and digital technology for funding. As I mentioned, it hasn't been updated in over 45 years, and a lot has changed. So these aren't luxuries for our students, they're necessities. And our students require comprehensive wraparound services to address their emotional, social, and academic needs. As it stands today, 1 in 5 students is currently facing a mental health crisis. In addition to that, 1 in 5 students also faces food insecurity, and this is what we're seeing in our communities. So we need to advocate, again, for a revision of the QBE funding formula, one that incorporates these essential weights for mental health, technology, and counseling, and continue to push for the $238 million that's currently left off the table that would empower our families and schools to provide services and systems for students that they desperately need. It'll, again, help us to hire qualified counselors, implement mental health programs, and ensure that every child has access and the technology necessary for their education. As the bill is set, there was a set aside from the already underfunded QBE formula for 1% of the QBE funded formula to be funded for the 400,000 students that qualify for this voucher. And what that would represent is $1 billion. However, right now, as it stands, that number actually looks more like $2.6 billion for the state. So without even walking into the funding portion, which will happen during this legislative session, we're already over budget. And again, we need these essential wraparound services for our communities just to take a holistic approach to education to better serve our students. So I know it was mentioned a few times that we should track the data, and we now have identified, you know, these students that fall in the bottom 25% in the state. So we should look at the data that's being used of why they're falling into the bottom 25 and revise the QBE formula so we can adequately fund our education so that our students have the opportunity to thrive. We create a better ecosystem and economic impact and for all of our families. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So basically, y'all, what Heather is saying is we don't have the money. It's already a short fund in public funding for education. It has not been reallocated properly in over 40 years. It's been the same funding system that you expect school systems to operate from. And with the, even though we've been putting money into the QBE to get it to certain levels, it's still not at the level it needs to be at in order to properly get the schools what they need for wraparound services, meaning those services, just not just teaching in the classroom, but what happens if a child needs social, they need aftercare, if they need mental health, if they need regular checkups, if they need, you know, all things that go on wraparound services for the entire child's life, right? So there are a lot of things involved. So the real issue that Heather was trying to really say, because I'm trying to sum it up so y'all can get it, is if we don't have enough money to do the basics for the local public schools in your area, your basic schools, how is it then that the state wants to siphon money from the already struggling schools and send it off to public charters, like the one that Representative Mayo works for, sending it to public charters, and sending it to private schools, where Representative Mitchell just told you that the average private school is upward of $30,000+, and $6,500 would not help Black people who are already struggling, because they wouldn't be able to pay the balance of the fees to send their child to a private school. So I just tried to sum that up in a nutshell so y'all could get where she was going with that. Okay, now, conversation. Representative Mitchell, why then, knowing these things, or Otha, or anybody, why then would legislators vote for this? And I don't mean the Black ones, Democrats now, I mean any of them. Why would they vote to cripple already struggling public schools? And we already know that all the education unions were against it. Teachers, educators, superintendents, schools, everybody, all the school systems, public school systems in Georgia, including those in predominantly white areas, public school, you know, were against this. How then did it pass? Representative Mitchell, I'm sorry. How did that pass? Because you were down there. How did this pass?
Well, you're so good and informed on these issues. I must say that I can't presume to figure out the motivation of every single member down there. I will say to you that my perception is that there are a lot of members who essentially don't want their children to attend schools with the average public school system, particularly in urban areas. That is the perception that I get. You know, we live in a culture where they're quick to ban books from public schools, but allow guns to proliferate. So why do they have these kind of notions? It just amazes me, and sometimes it's incomprehensible. I will tell you that, I'm so glad that you have Heather on this call, because in the lottery, to play the lottery, there's a provision in state law that they will never decrease public school funding, even getting these funds from the lottery. There is no such provision, as much as we tried, for this voucher program. Vidalia Turner, the president of the Georgia AFT, you should have her on your program in the future, says it this way, that these kind of bills are what you call foot-in-the-door bills. Today it's $6,500. Tomorrow it may be $12,000. And soon it may come to the point where it may furnish tuition cost for the entire amount. Once you get the foot in the door, all you have to do is pass bills that raises the threshold. And that may very well be the plan.
We already know that's the plan. We know that's the plan. Now, I want to ask you a question, because you skirmed around it. We have 159 counties in Georgia. The School Board Association and all the superintendents vehemently opposed that bill. Now, all of these Republicans, they fall in one of these 159 counties. I'm still trying to figure out now how this bill passed. I have the answer. This is my answer. My answer is, just like what's happening in Washington, D.C. on the federal level, those who have money, those Republicans, they don't give a hoot about working class people and their issues. They just want to make sure that they can send their kids to private schools and have a tax write-off, a little bit of money to help them put their children and their friends' kids where they want to go at the expense of marginalized and vulnerable population. Because ain't no way in heaven or hell that bill should have passed with every single school board and opposing it. And you know that's to be fact. And then black people participated in the foolery. And on top of that, we even had somebody to defect from the Democratic Party based on the issue. Now, I don't think that Democrats should be bullied because they have different of opinions. Because she said she was bullied. And I also don't think everybody has to have the same mindset about how we proceed with with education. I do think people have a choice. But I don't think that your choice should be at the expense of people, the rest of the state, who's already struggling, especially with schools that are already in peril. That's my personal opinion. Now, I'm going to go to break because I'm going to give y'all time to gather y'all thoughts about, we got this mess going on now. What do we do? That's the first question I'm going to ask y'all. And then coming back, how did we get here? Because clearly there is a problem, because Representative Mayo said it's so many people on the wait list for their children to attend public charter schools alone. And be honest, a lot of kids would send their kids to private schools right now if they could afford it, because they feel that the public school has failed them. How do we address that as well? We're going to talk about that when we come back. You're listening to the Wake Up with D Show on News and Talk 1380 WAOK. And Talk 1380 WAOK, the voice of the community. And we are having a discussion around school choice, vouchers, and the like. And I went out on the break asking Representative Mitchell, how did this bill pass? If the School Board Association was opposed to it, if teachers, educators, administrators were opposed to it, and then I gave my synopsis is that it's just like it is in D.C., that they didn't care what their constituents wanted or needed. This was about the haves continuing to take from the have-nots and getting their agenda across. Because logically, it wouldn't make any sense, being that everybody that voted for the bill lives in at least one of those counties, one of the 159 counties. And if the School Board Association was opposed to it and superintendents were opposed to it, how did it pass, other than the fact that those who have money want to make sure that their kids and their friends' kids could get assistance sending their kids to private school? Because they know They know. They sometimes they just use this tax breaks. And Representative Mitchell said it perfectly. He used a quote from Verdea Turner, who I did reach out to her. She's going to come on the show another day. She's ready. She's fired up for it. We talked about it. For them to open up the doors to do even more. And then what will this do to public education as we have it? So, Representative Mitchell, tell me again, like, what do we do now? How does this move across the board? And then Oprah or Heather, how is this going to impact the budget further? And I'm sorry, Heather, tell them what you do, because I forgot, I failed to do that. Tell them exactly what your title is.
Sure. I am the Georgia PTA legislative chair. And how this is going to impact the budget, again, we're already underfunded for K-12 education. We have been for 45 years. So we're further diverting funds from K-12 education by allowing our tax dollars to be diverted across the state. And I'll say that within the bill, it allows the $6,500 once it's not utilized within the county. So Dee, you were spot on earlier in the conversation when you said that we need to educate our families about the option because they should go through the application process. We are not saying that we agree with it, but we need to show physical accountability for the funds and make sure that we can prove that it is over the budget, right? And show like geographically what that looks like and that how the funds will then be taken away, let's say for DeKalb County, which has 47 schools on the chopping block, and follow the funds if it gets diverted to, let's just say, Cherokee County, where there's no schools on the list that fall into that bottom 25. And I think that's important for families and educators and our community at large to just continue to track the data. And then to advocate for the services that we know that are needed for our schools.
Okay. Thank you for that. I'm glad you talked about how this money we can then be diverted. So then, okay, so Representative Mitchell, what do we do? Is there any way, I mean, because, you know, the train has left the station now, but what do we do now? How do we stop this money, like she was just saying, be diverted to schools in other counties who may not have schools on the chopping block? This is a mess.
Well, the reality is we have to thank organizations like the PTA Association, the OTA Thornton, the good friend of the state, and then other organizations, the AFT and the like, because they are engaged. They help to assure that there is some transparency in the process. They help to assure that there should be some accountability in this. But that is the long answer in saying that our constituents, the voters, have to be engaged. When the typical constituent hears, oh, they're going to give me $6,500 to send my kids to private school, they believe that to be a great thing. They believe that they will be able to get their child into the best private schools in this state who all ask for pictures as a part of their application process. I wonder why that's necessary. This is education. It should be based on simply your performance. But but I digress here in that conversation. The reality, we have to make certain that we stay engaged. We let our legislators, those who represent us, know what we feel on this. And Heather's absolutely right. I will tell you, Reverend Dr. D. Dawkins, hey, you may appreciate that. You show me your checkbook, and I will show you your priorities. I think it's, Reverend, I think it's biblical in that where your treasure is, there will be your heart also. The fact that we spend so much money on jails and now taking money from public schools to send it to private schools, banning books and the like, shows you the priorities of those who happen to be in the majority party in this state at this time, of the Republicans. So we just have to overcome those kinds of issues, and thankfully we have organizations that are engaged with us to do just that.
Dee, this is Ota. I have to interject here. Bottom line is the system is not broke. It was designed that way. If you study history, especially here in Georgia, in the mid 1700s, when they began passing laws to prevent African Americans from being educated, all the way up until they established public schools in the late 1800s here in Georgia, separate and unequal schools. And now to hear, like I said, the system's not broken, it's designed this way. And then our legislators, and again, I'm not, when it comes to education, I am strictly nonpartisan. It's what's best for the public good of our kids as far as education. So we have to realize that now legislators, no matter which side of the aisle, a lot of our people don't know about the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is about a group of 3,000 or 4,000 predominantly white Republican men that meet on a regular basis and push legislation through Georgia and the other states that take away from our education. So I'm going to go back to our system is not broke. It's designed this way. So, again, as we move forward, we continue to increase the prison industrial complex and industry. Again, our schools, if they're not investing in our schools, they're providing a source to continue to fuel that system. So we need to keep that in mind. So the only difference is just slavery by another name. And I'll stop right there.
And I love the way you just said that. And I like when you first came on the show early and you broke down how we got to this point in Georgia with some of the systemic racism. But the question I still had when I went off the break last time is, how did we get here to the point that people feel like their public schools are failing them? Because remember, Representative Mayo said that their list is so long for people to get into one of the 96 public charter schools. They have thousands, certain schools, thousands and thousands of children waiting just to get into the schools. My question is, how do we fix this? How do we fix this? And because clearly it is something wrong. We know that they withhold funding. We got that. Should public schools maybe model charter schools? Because a lot of times in public schools, we do give breaks to the parents. We do allow certain behavior issues that they don't allow in charter schools. I don't know. At this point, I don't know. But what I do know is we have a situation and doggone house is on fire. Well, maybe that's not the time to say this because stuff going
on.
I'm
going to
take that one back but for right now. But
we got to go back to, again, because of, like I said, you have to look at history. People want to throw away history. Discouraged education, the barriers and everything. But here's the bottom line. Today, in 2025, we need to really put emphasis on parents taking responsibility where they can. Like I said, our parents have been broken. A lot of psychological problems. You heard Madam Chair from the Georgia PTA legislative team talk about the mental health care, the social and emotional education. We have to encourage to invest in them, and people like you, me, Representative Mitchell, and others just really have to just continue this fight to get that funding to take care of the mental issues, the wraparound services. That's all we can do, because as we know, some people do not care about our kids. And like I say again, the end state is they're in a prison, serving their needs, making cheap products, and doing the labor that they used to get for free.
Okay, we got to go to break. I know, but give me a few more minutes. I want y'all to come back for 1 minute after the break so we can close out properly. And I'm going to open the phone lines just for 15 minutes so that if anybody has any questions of you all, they can do so. Are y'all willing to do that for me?
Yes, ma'am.
Certainly.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
I appreciate that. You're waking up with Dee on News and Talk, WAOK. Waking up with Dee on News and Talk, WAOK. We have with us our phenomenal guest this morning. We're talking about school choice, and we really We're talking a little bit about this voucher bill that passed in Georgia that allows $6,500 to go towards the education of your child, even though we have struggling public schools right now. We do have some callers on the line that have a couple of questions for Representative Billy Mitchell, also for Otha and Heather. And I want to make sure y'all realize that Otha, you said something that caught me off guard when you said something about nonpartisan. I don't know what you said, but you have been our nominee for superintendent on the Democratic ticket several times. And if you had won, I get it, you would have been the superintendent for all Georgia citizens. But I just want people to know that the Republicans don't have a good plan when it comes to education. You see, they're already trying to get rid of the Department of Education. I just had to throw that in because you know me. That's what I do. Okay, so the first caller we're going to take is going to be Teresa Hardy from DeKalb. Good morning, yeah. Teresa.
Good morning. How are you?
We're well. We're well.
So my question is, and thank you, Representative Billy, Otha, and Heather, for being on this great discussion on education. Education is the key to success, period. Okay, so this idea of public charter, this is my question. If public charter is supposed to be so much better, why don't we just make all the schools public charter? What are we missing from a public charter than having our regular public schools? And I am a advocate for public schools.
I can talk to that. I can cut through the confusion. So public charters, generally, what happens there is they fall under the autonomy of the school board. They may have their own separate board to make decisions, but they fall under the authority of the school boards, and they are required, they have accountability to the school board. And only thing it does within a school district is the school district gives them the autonomy to do some things differently than the remainder of the schools in that school district, if that answers your question.
That gives me the makeup, but what makes it better? So what is the measurements in place to make public charter better? All schools are under the Board of Education, right? But you hire a superintendent to oversee all of that. So let me stop right there and you can answer that.
I can tell you. So the difference, the nuance in that is they give public charters the opportunity to try different things, and they're not as constrained or restricted by policies that the standard public school has. So that's the difference. So if I have a great idea in a public charter school, because again they already fall up under the public school system and that school board, they have a separate board. So if they make policies, they have that flexibility to maybe do things different. Maybe they, in a public charter school, they'll say, "Hey, we want kids to get more playtime." Okay, they will not be held to the same standard as a public school that says they can only have 30 minutes a day. So that is the nuance or the difference that we're dealing with.
Yeah, and Teresa, it's always good to hear from you. I think your point is very well taken, is that if there's something mystical or magical or exceptional about the charter schools, let's implement it everywhere. Let's make them into our regular. You'll find, I hear that often, that the charter schools don't have to comply with the strict regulation and policies that the public schools have, so that their outcomes are different. They may not be better, but they're different. So if there are, in fact, some strategies that can improve public schools, let's implement them universally.
I hate that Representative Ron Mayo, that Ron Mayo had to drop off, because that would have been a great question for him. And thank you so much for calling in on that, Teresa, because I have some questions myself. But when he comes back, because we're going to do a part two of this, because we got to get to the nitty gritty of this, because this is this is a very important conversation. So thank you. We got the phone lines. People are popping. Okay, Johnny from Atlanta.
Hey there. I got a question and a comment. I don't know if I can do both of them, but the first thing is, when they have the you get more and more charters, wouldn't that eliminate the public schools? Hello.
Representative Mitchell.
It would just give more schools with, say, Atlanta Public Schools. It would just give more boards the autonomy to do different things than the schools in the Atlanta Public School District.
Okay. And my comment is, I have a telling comment. I have a client over off of Candler Road. Say if you come in north, cross over Memorial Drive, there's four blocks down, there's a pocket of homes over there that, you know, is regentrification, $607 to probably $1 million. And I was able to talk to her. She told me her children go to charter school, and so I started trying to pick her brain without her knowing that I was picking her brain. But the long story came out. She says that, and you just mentioned about they're a little freer to, you know, do the way they want to do. She says she's on a board along with other neighbors, and basically, she said she's able to allow who they want in the school. And so when I heard that, that's segregation. So I think with a lot of these areas, that, you know, rich areas, they'll be able to get the charter schools, but still segregated. What do you think about that?
Well, it is no question that certain charter schools are able to influence which students are attending. Some have so-called lotteries. Some, they certainly, as Ron Mayo said earlier, they certainly don't accept every student that applies. The mere fact that they have boards, then they have groups that scrutinize applicants, let you know that the process is much different than the public school setting, which has to accept every student that is in that particular school zone. And that's one of the flaws of the charter school system, as I see it as well.
Thank you for calling in, Johnny. Do we have time? Yeah, we have time for one more right now before we go to break. Okay, Deborah from Atlanta.
Thank you so much. Much respect for all of you on the call today. I just want to say something. I think you called the letters QBE. You said it hasn't changed in 40 years. Who in Georgia is surprised at that? Because neither has minimum wage. And I want to say something when we talk about education, because I look at where Brian Kemp throws the money. He throws the money to the teachers, so that means he's getting the teacher support. So that's one of the reasons we are where we are today, because you voted and kept him in office. Yet these are the same teachers that are tired, overwhelmed, exhausted, quitting, don't want to work anymore. So my question is, how much of that money is going to parents where they can homeschool? Because a lot of teachers say that also. So we are where we are now. And then I also want to ask this question, because LeBron has a school in Akron, Ohio called I Promise. It is doing very well. If a lot of you had supported Dr. Umar instead of worrying about where he got his higher education from, maybe that school would be open. So maybe we need to start looking at that. Maybe we need to look at supporting the individuals who are already seeing these things coming, who wanted to make a change, but we were so busy worried about, well, not we, I'm not putting myself in these categories. We're so worried about where they got the higher education from. We're so worried about putting our money in different ways and different avenues. And we cannot just continue on this path. We need to find solutions. So I say build more schools. If this is the way it's going, then this is the way we need to go. We need to build more schools. We need to get behind the Dr. Umars. We need to get behind the LeBron Jameses in Akron, Ohio with our promise. We need to get behind getting our people who have the money, our professional people, for our basketball players, anyone, any our attorneys, doesn't have to be somebody just in sports, putting this money together and building these schools. And then I want to know, because it's only fair to parents with so many teachers saying how exhausted they are that they can't even look in the bag to see what they're sending home to the students in elementary school on Halloween or Christmas and things like that. What are we doing about the people? There were some good parents during COVID-19, but they could not sustain to continue to homeschool their children because they didn't have the funds. So if you're going to get $6,000-some-odd for a private school, how about giving the parents some of this money so they can homeschool the children? And you have to give them more, especially when aides are $5 and $7 apart, and especially if they have more than one child. So what do y'all think about that? What do y'all think about supporting building more schools and getting behind the Dr. Umar's?
Okay, that's a good question, but we can't get into that right now, y'all. I'm sorry. Now, y'all can hold over and answer that, because I told y'all I was giving y'all a certain amount of time to respect y'all.
Yeah,
but if y'all want
to
step to the next
segment, hold over.
Hold on. Okay, then, let's hold it over. I love this. This thing getting good. All right. You're waking up with D, News and Talk, 1380 WAOK. You're tuning in to the Wake Up with D morning show on WAOK. There was a question that was posed. I think it was a question. But anyway, I think she was trying to give an opinion about Dr. Umar and opening more schools. Representative Mitchell, you were about to respond to her.
Yes, I would say that if the caller had children of school age, then I'm sure they would be doing very well. That is the solution, being engaged and informed and making certain that your children who are in school are getting the resources they need out of their public schools. The reality is, though, that we have many a parent to send their children to school that are doing the best they know how to do. As I go to school, as many of the listeners and you go to school, I see children going to school eating, you know, potato chips and Coca-Cola on the way to school in the morning, and that certainly has to have a declining effect on public school. But to your question about can homeschoolers receive some of this money? Absolutely. $6,500 they would also go to pay for expenses for homeschoolers as well. But that's probably the only provision in this law that I like, simply because, you know, who are some of the greatest advocates for public school are those who formerly were homeschooler teaching their own children, because they understand the Herculean job it is to teach children. And that's more than the notion to homeschool your child. And though many of those who have done it for a year or two have found out that some of the greatest resources that we have are our public schools.
Anyone else want to tackle that before we go to the next caller?
Yes, I'd like to piggyback on that as well. I'll also add that during the pandemic, you know, we had several parents that had the opportunity to homeschool their kids. And again, to piggyback on Representative Mitchell's comments, they were some of our biggest advocates to reopen the schools and send the kids back to school.
Absolutely.
Because it was overwhelming for them. It also provides our parents with the opportunity to enter the workforce. It is a child care resource for a lot of people. We know in Georgia, we're currently facing a child care crisis as well. Many of our child cares have closed. After school programs are now, you know, not being funded adequately as well and are closing. So these services are essential for parents to be able to work. And, you know, parents often operate at a negative. You know, we're busy with work-life balance. And again, just having those additional services that are offered by the school and expanding upon those, again, with wraparound services, would help aid in those supports for parents so that our students can be more successful.
Thank you for that. I'm going to take the last caller on this issue.
This is Ulta, just very quickly. On February the 3rd, we're talking about dealing with children. The Georgia PTA is having its PTA Day at the Capitol, and we expect to see thousands of people down there in red to make sure that they understand and their representatives will be talking to them. So please, PTA Day at the Capitol for the Georgia PTA on education, dealing with vouchers, dealing with mental health, and all these other issues facing our kids and parents. So please come out and join us. It's free. Thank you so much, Steve.
You're welcome. Now, last question is going to be Maggie from Atlanta. She has a question for y'all, and then I'm closing out this segment. Go ahead, Maggie from Atlanta.
Yes, I'm glad y'all talking about this issue because people don't realize our property tax with school tax, that do affect us also. So the school tax is higher. So by them having these vouchers, and that's going to hurt. And that's also, we pay into schools, public school. And at the end of the day, our property tax is going up. But what I also is those teachers that who's teaching, sometimes do they have the certificate like they need to have against the regular teachers?
That's a good question because I think that is what Deborah was referring to. She's like, people were bothered by Dr. Umar having a school and whether the people were credentialed instead of focusing on the children getting a quality education. And I'm going to say one of two things. When people homeschool, they may not have a high school diploma. However, I think if you are getting paid with taxpayers' dollars, then you need to have some type of criteria in place in order to educate our children. It may not necessarily have to be a teacher's degree because sometimes you may, let's say you're an engineer, you may be able to teach math and science, okay? But if your major was, let's say, food services, I really don't think you should be teaching world geology or, you know, English, unless you have something that could show us that you can do it. So that's a very good question. I'm going to close this out now because we got to have this conversation. If public schools are failing, why are they failing? Are we going to continue to let Black schools fail? Do we need to have a meeting of the minds? When we going to have it? We've been talking too long. Our children are the ones that are suffering. I don't condone, I vehemently, like I told you, oppose vouchers, but at the same time, we gotta, instead of opposing stuff, we better have some type of solution and strategy to address this, because who's going to suffer? The kids. And we already got the joker saying he's gonna eliminate the Department of Education. While that may not be true to dismantle it, they can cripple it if they go into the appropriations process and they take away their funding out of their budget. So we've got to be proactive, not reactive, and figure out a way to get this thing fixed, because the waiting list is long for public schools. Republicans putting their foot on the gas. In a minute, we're going to have a whole mess on our hands. And we already know Republicans are not very good at public school education. How do I know? Because all the places where the Republicans are in charge, education is that the kids are performing at the bottom of the list, the very, very bottom. So we already know they don't know what they're doing. Now, so thank you so much, Representative Billy Mitchell. Thank you so much, Otha Thornton. Thank you so much, Heather. Ooh, Heather, your last name. Say it for me.
Scalzetti.
With the Georgia PTA, Otha being an educational advocate and leader for so many years and former national PTA president, and then Representative Rameo with the Georgia Public Charter Schools Association, Georgia Charter Schools, who had to get off. All of you all for this conversation. I appreciate y'all. We're going to go to break and come back, and then I'm going to finish that conversation I started earlier today when I got on and talked about how the orange minion demon named President, y'all know his name, the orange minion had the audacity to criticize Governor Newsom with these fires, and it wasn't the time to do that because he doesn't have any coof. Y'all know this. And then we had the caller from D.C., who wanted to get on and read his notes that was probably prepared for him to defend Trump, because Tea Party Lou probably called him on the phone yesterday and said, I got to get a Black person, Republican, to talk to, you know, D, because she continuously shuts me down. Well, I told her to go get them, and she did. So I'm coming back to you, sir, because you don't know what you're talking about. This is News and Talk, WALK, the voice of the community.